What's your recycling system like? Are you a composter, or do you really have an elaborate recycling system where you're at?
Look, for many of us with green thumbs, it might be harder for you to recycle just based on where you live in Greater Sydney. To speak about this, we're joined by our resident Oscar the Grouch, Sana Shake. Sana, hello.
Hello.
So, Sana, we've been chatting at Backchat about bins a fair bit recently behind the scenes. Earlier this year, we covered the closure of REDcycle and what it means for soft plastic recycling. Look, and I'm always interested in exploring about how where you live in Sydney can impact different aspects of your life, just like your bin system. And so I live in Western Sydney, and I've noticed that the recycling system in some Western Sydney LGAs are quite different to here in Redfern and even when I was living in the East. So
yeah.
Can you just tell us the difference, like the different recycling options there are in Greater Sydney?
I completely echo that. So just to break it down for you, your home recycling options in Sydney are completely based on where you live and the council area that you live in. So as a baseline, everybody has two bins. There is the recycling bin and there is also the general waste bin that you can just chuck whatever you like into it. These bins in Sydney all don't have, like, not every council has the same corresponding lid colour for the bin. So we're not going to talk about the colour of the lids, unfortunately. There are also some councils in Greater Sydney which offer additional FOGO bins, which is for food, organic and garden organic waste. There are 56 councils in New South Wales that offer FOGO collection services. So if you live in the area of Penrith City Council, the Inner West Council, Randwick Council or Woollahra Council, then you will have access to FOGO in some way, shape or form. There also are 14 councils in Greater Sydney which offer free soft plastic recycling options via Recycle Smart. So if you live, for example, in Burwood or the Campbelltown area, Inner West, Randwick or Penrith and many more, you have access to that too.
And yeah, I guess, you know, there are these different recycling systems. Look, I know that Inner West Council recently moved from collecting the general waste bin weekly to fortnightly, and it's been so confusing and it stinks out there.
Oh yeah.
It's smelly.
That's what we've been talking about for weeks, that Petersham in the Inner West just stinks.
Petersham, stinky. Dulwich Hill right now, it stinks. I was actually walking behind a garbage bin as it went through collecting stuff the other day, and it was going so slow, I assume, because everyone's bins are so full.
And people are saying that even the public bins, there's lots of rubbish surrounding them. Some of the councils who have FOGO have said that part of the reason why they've reduced the frequency of the general waste bin being collected is because a significant portion of the waste in the general waste bin is actually food or food waste. So when they have a FOGO option, they're saying it's actually moved from the general waste bin to the FOGO. There is also, I guess we'll chat about what is the biggest council in Sydney and what they're doing. That is Blacktown City Council. They are the biggest council in Greater Sydney, and they actually only offer a general waste bin and a regular schmegular recycling bin. They do not offer FOGO and they do not offer free soft plastic recycling, which I think is such a shame because there are 400,000 plus residents in that council area who could have been recycling if their council did offer this option. I did reach out to Blacktown for comment, but they didn't get back to us in time.
I love a good name and shame. Blacktown City Council, that one's just for you. You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio, where we run down the news that matter to you. Right now, we're chatting to Sana Shake, resident producer, on recycling and what it looks like in your local LGA. Sana, can you tell us a little bit about how where you live can impact your recycling options?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a little bit, and we have a lot of conversations around how, like, climate change and being environmentally friendly should be very individual focused. And I guess there's only so much that an individual can do when, like, the whole system is messed up. Don't want to swear on it. I think it's really disappointing that where you live in Greater Sydney can impact how easy it is for you to recycle. Lots of people want to recycle their food and organic waste or want to recycle their soft plastics. And we see this through, you know, REDcycle and how many people use those services. But it's disappointing that if you live in particular parts of Sydney, you don't have access to that. Holly, you live in the Inner West. What's it like for you?
With the soft plastics recycling,
yeah.
I know that one of the women in my building, I have seen her I think she books in with the council maybe to get her soft plastics recycled. She puts them all in a big bag and she puts them outside with a little note on them every so often. And I never knew what she was doing until now. You've just said that Inner West Council does have a soft plastic pickup, so that must be what she's doing. I was like, okay, someone's coming to collect her bags. Interesting. But that's good to know. And look, we want to hear from you. How's your bin set up? Is it confusing you? Are your streets stinky? Let us know your thoughts on 0409 945 945. And Sana, you've reached out to a number of councils in Greater Sydney to see where they're going in terms of recycling options. What have they said?
Yeah, I reached out to six councils. I heard back from the city of Canterbury, Bankstown, and a spokesperson said that, and I quote, "FOGO has been mandated by the state government and council is working towards implementation but has not yet decided on a rollout date." I also spoke to the Northern Beaches Council, and I have a quote that I can attribute to their mayor, Sue Hines. And she says, and I quote, "We are on a mission to transform waste management on the Northern Beaches. By 2040, we will be leading the way in circular economy practices with the waste and litter services that deliver the cleanest public spaces in Sydney. We've taken a major step towards a sustainable reuse, repair and recycle model of waste management with the launch of our first waste and circular economy strategy." I guess one thing that I should mention is the soft plastics recycling option is available to lots of people in lots of different councils in Greater Sydney. But if your council doesn't offer it to you, the pickup for free, you actually have to pay for the pickup.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rude.
Yeah. Well, Sana, thank you so much for breaking this down for us.
Thank you, your resident Oscar the Grouch.
Next up, we'll be chatting to Dr. Katrina Pryor about how young people deal with stress.
Yesterday was not my birthday, so you are wrong. My birthday was last month.
Back chat
on
FBI Radio.
If you're 18 or over, having a few drinks is probably a normal part of your social calendar. But have you ever stopped to think about why you're picking up a beverage? For many young people, it can be used as an anxiety or stress reliever.
And that's why a program called Inroads is helping young people understand their drinking habits. They're about to start the next trial and they want to hear from you if you're 17 to 30 and experience both anxiety and are drinking above recommended Australian health guidelines, which is no more than 10 standard drinks per week and no more than 4 standard drinks on any one day. We're joined by Dr. Katrina Pryor from the Matilda Centre for Research in Mental Health and Substance Use, the University of Sydney, to tell us all about it. Dr. Pryor, hello.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Now, do you want to tell us about the origin of Inroads and what the program is aiming to achieve?
Yeah, of course. So, as you kindly alluded to, so Inroads is actually a free online program. There's 5 online modules as part of the program, and the idea behind it is that we want to provide people with, young people, you know, the skills to cope with anxiety and life stresses and also help set limits around drinking. So the program was developed by clinical psychologists, and there's a strong evidence base behind the program. And we also got input from young people themselves to make sure it was appealing and also appropriate for young people. So I guess the reason we developed Inroads was because there's a lot of treatments out there that focus on either anxiety or drinking, but they basically ignore the interconnections between them. Or that idea of drinking to cope, where people experience both problems at the same time. So we actually, my team developed and trialled a program for adults with disorder level problems and found that it was really effective. And it started making us wonder whether we could intervene earlier, so people who are younger and when symptoms are just starting to emerge, so people are just developing, you know, risky drinking habits, and when anxiety is really coming into play. So we wanted to focus on young adulthood, and we also knew that this is really a time in people's lives where they start experiencing a heap of different changes and anxiety-provoking situations. So things like moving out of home or starting a new job, so people start getting more autonomy and responsibility at that age. And as a result of that, anxiety often becomes more prominent, and the risk of developing bad drinking habits, I guess, is increased as well. So we wanted to really get in early before problems are too chronic and entrenched. And alongside that, we knew that young people often prefer digital or online programs. They're a bit more convenient and flexible compared to face-to-face options. You know, there's anonymity as well. And people, there's also less stigma because people don't have to know you're accessing help for your mental health or drinking problems. So with all that in mind, I guess we developed inroads to, yeah, provide people ways to manage their anxiety and also take control of their drinking. We didn't want the program to be abstinence focused. We knew that for young people, that's probably not super realistic. We wanted to make sure it was something that people would actually engage in. So while we encourage people to have what we call a drinking holiday or a period from drinking, kind of like the dry July concept, it's not something that, you know, we really push for. We just want people to get skills to manage anxiety and drinking better.
I mean, you've just touched on it briefly, but how big of an issue is anxiety-related drinking in young people?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is really common. So around 1 in 3 people who experience anxiety will drink to cope with their symptoms. So it can sort of raise its head in different ways, or people can do it differently. So some people, it might be drinking at the end of the day to relax or unwind. For other people, it might be having a drink to make them feel more confident when socialising or doing things like going on a date. And then other people, it might be, you know, having a drink before they do something like public speaking. So the reasons people drink to cope are quite varied. But I guess what we know is in the short term, and this is what makes it difficult for people to recognise that it's a problem, is that in the short term, drinking like that can actually make people feel a bit better. It may actually reduce their anxiety, but we also know that over the long term, people then develop a reliance on drinking to cope, and that way of coping with their anxiety. So that typically then leads to more drinking and problems from drinking. So we typically see things like more arguments, things like shame and guilt over things they said or did the night before, really intense hangovers or withdrawal symptoms. And then what that does is it feeds back into that initial anxiety they experience. So I guess paradoxically, the alcohol actually can exacerbate their anxiety. So there's this vicious cycle that develops between the two. So what we really wanted to do, because we know sort of anxiety-fueled drinking is quite a big issue, particularly for young people, we really want to provide young people with skills to cope, you know, and deal with that a bit more easily.
Sorry, you're tuned into Backchat on FBI Radio. Right now, we're chatting about drinking habits among young people and the programs to understand this with Dr. Katrina Pryor. Do you see healthy drinking habits amongst your mates? Text in on 0409 945 945. Katrina, what have the results been of the trials so far?
Yeah, we've seen really positive results. So we actually ran a trial initially in 2018, and we coupled the online inroads program with some psychologist support. So across the 5-week program, people received 2 calls with a psychologist and weekly emails. And there were really great benefits in terms of reduced social anxiety and problematic drinking. And we got awesome feedback from people who were involved in the program. But what we then realised was that, you know, adding psychologist support is expensive. So we were trying to think of ways to make possible to roll out the program more easily, and what we thought we could do is develop more of a self-guided program where people go through more as just an online program, and instead would have those calls with someone like myself. So I've got a background in psychology, and you know, we wanted it to be so that it was more just technical and motivational support rather than therapeutic support. So that's what the trial we're running now is doing. So if people are interested, we'd love for you to consider signing up. The website's inroads.org.au. So we're trialing now more a self-guided program with chats with sort of a lay support person, we're calling it. And we imagine the results will be pretty similar. So we're providing people exactly the same sort of strategies and ways of managing anxiety without relying on alcohol, but we just think it'll be a more cost-effective alternative without the psychologist's involvement. So what we're hoping to do if the program's effective, fingers crossed, is that we can then more easily roll it out nationally so that more people can benefit from the program.
Just quickly, are there any other resources for people who this has struck a chord with?
Yeah, absolutely. So So InRoads is very much targeted at people who drink to cope with alcohol. It's the only program that does address the two. So if people listening do know, if they experience this or someone else they know do, we'd love for people to visit the website or keep an eye out for social media posts we'll be putting up. But if people experience other mental health issues, things like depression, the program doesn't directly cover that. So there are alternate resources. Some great evidence-based programs, digital programs for young people are available on sites like This Way Up Clinic or Mindspot Clinic. And face-to-face options are also available through places like Headspace. So InRoads, we'd love people to sign up if drinking to cope is the main concern, anxiety or drinking. But there are really great resources available for people who experience other mental health problems. So we really encourage people to give online programs a go, whether it kickstarts their decisions to getting more sort of intense support, face-to-face support, or whether it can be digital programs are also really great for maintenance and sort of boost support after people have received care as well. So it can be used in a range of different ways. But yeah, they definitely have a place. So yeah, we'd love people to sign up or check out the website.
Katrina, thank you so much for your time today.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You too. That was Dr. Katrina Pryor talking to us about drinking issues among young people and the InRoads program that is seeking to understand it. Next up, we'll be chatting with a representative from Australia's Music Union about the state of the Sydney live music scene.
Backchat, backtalk.
Exciting news for people who love surveys and also music. The state government wants to hear from you. They're doing a live music audit to hear from musos, venue owners and punters about what can be done to return the scene to its former glory.
Yeah, if you haven't noticed, the Sydney live music scene post-COVID is a bit sad clown noise, like womp womp. Luckily, we're joined on the line by Elise Chidiak, an organiser with the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. That's the official union for the music and entertainment industry. We love music. We love unions. Elise, hello.
Hi, how are you going?
We're great. Thanks for joining. Now, according to liquor and gaming data, New South Wales has lost half of its live music venues over the past decade. We're down to our last 137. Elise, what is going on here?
Yeah, look, it's been a tough couple of years, I think it's safe to say. Obviously, lockout laws and COVID didn't really help the industry in terms of creating live music spaces for musicians to be able to perform in, which has dried up a lot of opportunities to work. The government did recently scrap a bunch of regulations, which basically now means that it will be easier for venues to host live music and more difficult for them to get shut down over things like noise complaints. So it's great to see that moves are being made in the right direction. But from our perspective as the Union of Working Musicians, it's just really important to ensure that any policy or program or regulation that is in place to support spaces that host live music are also supporting the musicians who create that music by way of, you know, paying them a proper fee and properly valuing the work that they do.
The government's live music survey is looking at a few different factors that might be holding the industry back, like noise restrictions, venue closures, and cost of living. I'd be interested to hear about what the MEAA see as the biggest obstacles here.
Oh, God, where do I begin? Look, I think it's great to hear that there's going to be a comprehensive survey and audit of the live music industry in New South Wales. We hope that this will shed some light on, unfortunately, the experience of an overwhelming majority of musicians and of our members, which is that of exploitation and economic insecurity. These are the workers who are the backbone of the industry, and things like unpaid gigs, underpaid gigs, and late payments are really rife in the music industry. It's extremely hard for musicians to hold a sustainable career. We know that from research we've conducted a couple of years ago amongst our members that one in four gigs are unpaid, and the average hourly wage of musicians is roughly $7.50 an hour, which is less than a third of the national minimum wage that employees get. So every single one of our members has a story about how they've been exploited or disrespected in some way while working. And we hope that that this survey will shed some light on that experience.
Wow. And, you know, I imagine as well, you know, this obviously extends, you know, way beyond just looking at music, because I think an issue that we've heard about in the past is that as a venue owner, you can make a lot more money and a lot more reliably if you just took the floor space you would have bands in and filled it with pokey machines instead.
Mm.
So, yeah, kind of looking across multiple industries there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I can't speak for how profitable it is to have pokies at a venue or the many, many business models that venues and festivals and events rely on. But what I can say on that is that live performance is a multi-billion dollar industry in this country. Music is the most profitable sector in the entertainment industry. So there's no question that live music is profitable. There's also a huge demand for it. It's one of the most highly accessed art forms in this country. But yeah, as I was saying before, there is a disconnect there in terms of who actually does the work, who creates the value and how they're being recognized. So yeah, it sort of begs the question, who's doing the work and who should be paid for it? And that's exactly what our members are trying to address through our minimum fee campaign.
You're listening to FBI Radio's Backchat, your news and current affairs program. We're joined today by Alicia Chidiak from the Musicians Union, Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance to chat about live music. Are you a Sydney muso? Text us your take on this on 0409 945 945. Elise, what have you been hearing from members in terms of the solutions they'd like to see?
Look, our members want the government to continue to work with us as they have been doing to rebuild the social license of the music industry. And our minimum fee campaign, which is calling for a standard fee floor for musicians, is a key part of that. The good news is that the New South Wales government has been working with us to develop their first ever strategic policy for music in the state. And they also actually endorsed our minimum fee for publicly funded gigs late last year. So that's a step in the right direction and ensures that public money isn't being spent in a way that's exploitative. But we also need to start thinking about how we can get fair fees across the board, not just for funded gigs. And that's something that we need not just the government but also the wider industry to talk with us about so that we can come to terms on an arrangement that benefits everybody. And our members look forward to building upon the progress that has already been made on that front. So if you're a muso, if you're a working musician, then you need to get on board and join our union.
Absolutely. You know, what is it? Divided we beg, united we bargain. And
yes, exactly.
Now, final question, just quickly. We know that it was successive state government policies like lockout laws that essentially shut down Sydney nightlife. Now, the government's saying it wants to help bring it back. You kind of touched on this before. You know, should we believe them?
Sorry, I didn't quite get that, the end of that.
Oh, sorry about that. You kind of touched on this a bit earlier, but, you know, the government is showing positive signs of wanting to kind of come to the table and help bring back Sydney nightlife.
Yes.
So, you know, is I guess the vibe, for lack of a better term, positive?
Yeah, look, like I said before, it's what the government has released after they had committed to a pre-election pledge of working with us as the Union of Musicians and providing minimum fee for publicly funded gigs. Once they were actually elected, now they're doing consultation on a plan for the first ever strategic policy for music, but also more widely for arts and culture in the state as well. So, look, all of those are first steps. There is a lot more that needs to be done, but we have the pledge there.